A busy show again this week, so let's get right into it with part two of what we started last week with Mark Coleman, based in Malaga, telling us about football over there in Spain, on the continent, and globally, really, because of his involvement with the United Nations Cup that's coming off in October, one of the many international tournaments taking place across the globe now. So, without further ado, here's my pal Mark.
Mark, I wouldn't be proper for me to talk to you about this. Well, before I talk to you about referees, what about all the other age groups, 50s, 60s?
Yeah, there is. So we've got 60s and 70s. So the 70s is really well populated by 8 teams. The 60s is the second best populated category with 16 teams, just under the 50s.
Okay.
And then the real explosion, the real growth explosion is for the first time, because there was only before in 2023, just 2 years ago, there was only exhibition games involving England and one or two nations. And this year we've got
the ladies.
We've got 18 teams across three age groups. So 40s, 50s and 60s. The sort of the age group that misses out a little bit, unfortunately, is the 65s, because England 65s are a very, very strong side.
Yeah.
And but the manager has his team fixed, and they're world champions, and they're a very good side. So that, you know, why would he look outside of those players? It just means that the England 65s have pretty much got their nose pressed to the window at most tournaments, looking from the outside looking in.
Yes.
So there's debate there to be had as whether another category, you know, should be shoehorned in.
Yeah, it's a big part of our football here in Scotland. Over 65s is a standalone category now. Of course, you get overlaps. You know, there's a lot of guys in the 65s that play in the 60s and some that play in the 50s as well. But that's just the nature of our sport. What about next April? We've got the Glasgow Cup here that we have every year. Glasgow Life put it on. And we've got an over 75s category next year for the first time.
Fantastic, isn't it? That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Is this the tournament that I saw a little bit of news on? Is this the biggest tournament? Is this something like the biggest tournament in the world?
That's the Scottish Cup.
Right.
I did two programmes from the Scottish Cup, because I just roamed about chatting to people, and it was a fantastic day in Glasgow Green. And there was
Simon, to roam about chatting to people.
nearly a thousand participants.
That's fabulous.
Chest, heart and stroke are there, and we had a Parkinson's tournament, a standalone Parkinson's tournament that the West of Scotland won. And we have a festival as well of non-competitive that teams come from across the country.
This is coming from an organising, like, you know, from my experience of trying to put this on. And obviously, this is not me. There's a team of us doing it. But who organises this event for these 1,000 players? How does that come about?
One person, because he started it. Six, 7 years ago now, and when it was much, much smaller, as you can imagine. He's got the template, he's got the facilities. His name's Matt Ramsey. He's been on the programme. He's my boss with Glasgow Life, because I'm a coach with Glasgow Life. Matt runs he's put together all the Walking Football Scotland leagues for the over 50s, 60s, 65s, 70s, and the ladies. Glasgow Cup is his baby, because he's the football development officer with Glasgow Life, which is a big charity here in Glasgow that has all the gyms and swimming pools and all that. So he does get the Glasgow Cup, and there's teams come from all over, it was a team from down south that won it, actually. A team from Leeds that won one of the sections. But Matt does all of that like clockwork, and it's like water off a duck's back to him now. And that's almost disrespectful, because everybody else looks aghast at the amount of work that goes in. He even puts the coins out in the morning, you know.
The administration, that is phenomenal. I mean, that's not just obviously it's grown over the years, but that's not just a plug-in and play scenario, is it? I mean, that takes a hell of a lot of organisation. I mean, the timings of it, I mean, I've watched.
He's got the press there, Sky were there, the press were there. He's always got professionals there. He's always got professional footballers are giving out the prizes, ex-players, etc. I mean, it's just astonishing. And I know what he means him, that he did it last year, so it slots into place. But
I think talk to him, Simon. It'd be good if you can hook us up, because I'm sure there'll be some stuff I need to talk to him about, and to get his views on. But maybe he might be able to get involved with what we're doing down here. I mean, certainly the exposure on like Sky and or anyone like that, really, or you know, some big hitting sort of chief journalists would be welcome. I'm sure he's got that contacts, isn't he?
Yeah, for sure. Let me talk to you about a subject close to my heart, because I'm coming over and refereeing is always something that raises its head at any level of walking football, the same as football. There'd be no game without them and all the rest of it. What's your pool of referees for the Nations Cup, Mark? Are they coming from different countries, or are they all local?
They're coming from different countries, although most of them hail from the UK originally.
Right.
So what we did was we reached out to the WFA and Nigel Jenner, who's the referee's secretary, and we asked them to come down and produce a training course, or for our referees down on the Costa del Sol and the Costa Blanca,
right,
to enroll on a training course, a WFA training course, which was quite detailed and took about 6 months to complete. There's two parts of it. One was to train up and improve the quality of our referees here.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was to then make sure that they were eligible and were qualified to referee in the World Cup that we were hosting.
Right.
It didn't make any sense to us to bring 25 or whatever it might be referees from the UK. And there was another element to it. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, beat around the bush. There was the finance element. So
of course,
we didn't want to bring 25 referees to and pay for the flights and hotels from the UK. So as I understand it, we have about a third of the referees are Spain-based referees. We've then got two-thirds from England, or from who originally are from England but may be coming from Cyprus, France, and one of the Channel Islands. So that's where we're at the moment. Now, I spoke to Paul Carr about this and said, look, what's the vision for the Federation regarding training referees? He said, we're in Japan last year, we're in Thailand last year, and we've trained up X amount of referees. But unfortunately, at the moment, there's not enough trainers. So when you've only got one, with Nigel Jenner, who's, you know, with respect, he can't get around the world training referees solely. So we need to have train the trainer referees that are then qualified to train the referees in their home countries. And once we have those, then I think we're going to get a broader spectrum of referees from around the world. And because it's not just, obviously, the World Cup is not just about players and coaches and whatever, it's about referees as well. And I don't think it's not a healthy situation for a World Cup to be officiated by predominantly English referees. So this is something that, again, it's work in progress, isn't it? Hopefully 2 or 3 years down the line, we're going to have a better cross-section representation.
Were you a referee at all, Mark? Have you ever been a referee?
No, I've made a lot of referees' notebooks, and I was in a fair few reports, not actually as an official.
Okay. If you don't mind, then I'll give you, just because you talked about the Scottish Cup there, and I was the referee liaison officer with Walking Football Scotland until our last Scottish Cup. So just some wee lessons that we have learned along the last couple of years, because we're always looking for consistency. That's what the players want. It's what the managers want. It's what spectators want, is to know that the referees are kind of on the same page. If not the same line, or even in the same book, sometimes would be helpful. So what we did at the Scottish Cup was got all the referees together. This maybe sounds a bit strange, but they're a team and they talk to each other, and the referees learn more from each other than they'll ever learn in a training course or doing their exams. We're always learning together, and that goes on. I've met referees in their 70s still refereeing amateur football, and they're still learning. So it's just the way it is. So getting them all together and making them into a team, you know, telling them, let them discuss it and let them agree. This sounds daft, but I've gone onto the pitch with linesmen, and I have to tell the linesmen what I want from them and what I don't want from them. And that happens before every game of football at professional level as well. That team of three, and more now, of course, with VAR and all the rest of it, they need to be on the same wavelength. There's nothing worse than a linesman or third official putting his flag up and the referee ignoring him, because that just makes the crowd go daft, you know. So they need to be in the same wavelength. So we still give them a wee pep talk and have a wee chat with them before the tournament. And because it's all about the referee, we walk in football, about the level of running. That's the main thing that they need to, and they all need to be in agreement of what's going to be acceptable. Is this making any sense?
No, it's making perfect sense. And what we did for the World, you know, what we did for this year to change from the last World Cup, I think that sometimes it's a question of too many cooks. And yeah. I don't think walking football in a 40 by 30 pitch that you need three officials, which is what we had in St George's Park. So we've agreed on two. So we've agreed on a ref and a line judge, but also someone that's going to be watching for walk, you know, running off the ball and what have you. And I think that will work more effectively in teams of two than in teams of three. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion. Whether it bears out like that, I don't know, but I think it is important. And the referee, you know, whether it's groups of two or three, are a team.
Mark, just a wee point about that. Is one of them in overall charge of the game and the other one's assisting him?
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Because you need one person in charge. You need one decision maker.
There's one person in charge and one assisting. That's the format. And I think that, you know, as a player, and I spoke to this a lot of people saying, well, you know, so-and-so was running this, that, and the other. I said, look, we're playing a game where if we're playing normal football, then there's certain rules there that certain things that could be debated within a game of 11-a-side football, whether it was handball, you know, whether he caught that player there, whether that was whether he dived, with walking football, the referees are under a huge amount of pressure because it's an opinion. It's an opinion on whether someone is running or not. And some people say, it's not an opinion, it's either running or not running. And I said, well, certain people have certain walking styles and what have you, and certain referees will allow that, some referees won't. So it's an opinion of the referee. Now, what I say to players is that within a couple of minutes of a game of walking football, you can pretty much establish what the referee will deem as and not deem as running. And then you need to now tailor your game as an individual or as a team to what the referee will allow. Yeah. Now, if that referee allows something that's 5% more or 5% less than the previous referee, so be it. Mm. But within a couple of minutes, you know exactly to what level he's officiating to the running. So there's no excuse for then 25 minutes into the game saying, well, you know, he's allowing this, allowing that. It's like you play the game to what the referee is allowing you to play. In an ideal world, as I see it, Simon, is that we need to narrow the gap between the referee in a tournament or a league that allows, in some people's opinion, running or a faster paced game, to the referee that wants a slower paced game. Now, if those two poles are miles apart, then you've got a problem. Yeah. If they're close together, I think that's as good as you can possibly expect a referee or a tournament or a league to be run, forgive the pun, to be officiated by. You know, that if that's the rule of thumb, then I think that's the best you can possibly expect. So for me, it's having the poles far apart and referees allowing a much quicker game to referees that are allowing a much slower game. That would be my interpretation or my, you know, of my rule of thumb as to how the game should be officiated.
Good. It's interesting. We did I think it's about a year ago now, maybe more, but we were asked to do a demo of walking football at a football festival that was going on. There was girls there. I think they were under 21s, maybe under 18s, but certainly 21s. And they were a team, they're a football team. And they asked if they could play in the walking football to get for fun. And they did. And these girls were good. You know, they were footballers. And they walked. Not one of them ran. They walked the whole time, actual walking, like you would do when you're walking the dog or whatever. They didn't have to run because they could pass the ball and their first touch was excellent. It was the old guys, it's us that were doing, trying to get the running in. It's really strange. And it's the same with kids. Sometimes kids get involved. Grandkids are there. During the summer holidays just now, some people bring their kids because it's summer holidays and we maybe get them involved. And they don't run. They could run. They could run up and down the park all day, but they understand that it's walking football. Whereas the older they get, the 70s, we kind of stopped running.
They try and make up for lost, make up a little bit of lost mobility. But you hit the nail on the head, Simon. The game is always, has always been about, whatever format of the game, the game's always been about passing and control and shooting. It's all been about the first touch and a vision and a weight of a pass. And when I coach the ladies down here in the Costa del Sol, you know, I say to them, this game is a pass into feet game. You don't play football with the ball into space in walking football. It's about your first touch, how you receive it, and how you move it on, and that's it. And then sort of conversely to what you've just said, when we play, when we have kids coming down here to meet their, you know, to come on holiday to see their parents and that, we'll sometimes play them and they'll say, oh, walking football isn't there. I said, okay, right, okay, bring next Wednesday, bring your boots down. I said, you'll play us. What, are you going to play us? I said, yeah, but it's walking football. I said, okay, walking football. Anyway, we beat them hands down every time because they can't, they can't use their extra, they can't use their speed and strength. So they're a little bit limited. So, much to their frustration, they get absolutely incensed by it. But
And they pass the ball 3 or 4 yards in front of each other because they're used to running onto it all the time. Yeah. All the angles are different. Everything's different, isn't it?
Everything's different.
Yeah. And it's the same for the referees. Referees have had their whole life trying to let a game breathe, trying not to interfere too much. And with walking football, they need to, in order to keep the lid on it, they need to interfere regularly just to keep the pace down and keep the thing. Tell me a wee bit about the rules for
the of the game, but it's they've got to, you know, players have got to realise it's they've got to remember what we're playing, what format we're playing while we're playing it, and this is the problem you get when you play. You've got players coming, both ladies and men. You've got players coming from running 7-a-side or 11-a-side into walking football and want to get it go for the first time. It takes them a good 3 months. To get it into the system to understand what it's about.
We've got people who've been playing for 7 and 8 years that still argue, not whether they were running or not, but it's a stupid rule. It's a stupid rule.
That's an absolute classic, isn't it?
Mark, tell me a wee bit about your rules then. Just skim across them. The 3-touch, this is for the Nations Cup we're talking about in October. Tell me the dates. No. Tell me the dates.
The dates first, did you say, Simon?
Yeah.
Yeah, 21st to the 24th, so it's Tuesday to Friday.
Okay.
And then it's the 28th to the 31st, Tuesday to Friday. So 21st, 24th, 28th, 31st.
What's the and two different dinner, things?
There's a gala dinner on the Friday of each tournament. So that's going to be... going to be interesting, putting 500-600 people on a silver service and white tablecloth job up in the auditorium, which is a fantastic facility, but it's cost us an absolute arm and a leg because it's the only place that can absorb 500 people. So we had a one-stop shop. It's either that or nothing. So
what's the first dates then, the 21st to 20th? Is that the over-50s?
Yeah, so you've got the over-50s, over-40s ladies and over-70s men.
Right.
And then you've got the over-50s women, over-60s women and over-60s men. We've just spoken about the great big event up in Scotland with 1,000 players. But I said to Paul Carr, I said, I just don't think we can handle having every category over 1 week, but he obviously managed it in Scotland. But we thought we'd split it into two tournaments. So that's
Glasgow Green is a major venue, though. It's got lots of cages as well. It's got half a dozen cages, and it's got half a dozen.
Is it like Hackney Marshes would have been in the sort of 80s down in London? Is it like multiple pitches?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's got two big Astros. So there's 4 pitches right away. There's a big grass section that we don't use further out. I mean, on a Saturday morning, you've maybe got a dozen full scale 11-a-side games going on there, you know? Maybe not a dozen, maybe about 8. Plus the cages that are used all week for fives and whatnot that we utilise for the walking football. So it's a major thing, and it's just a logistic thing. But the teams are so used to it now, probably that helps as well, that you turn up, you've got your map before you get there that's been sent out. Yeah. You've got your fixtures and what pitch you're on, and pretty much your fixtures are all on the one park or between two pitches. All the referees stick to their park as well, so
it's like the Glastonbury of football, isn't it?
And I always say, I had a charity do a couple of weeks ago, and I used to get quite uptight about it. I think this is the 5th one that I've done for cystic fibrosis, but I didn't bother with this. I did the fixtures, and I obviously spoke to the people, the helpers that were going to make it all happen on the day. But the football looks, see, once that first whistle goes, the football looks after itself thereafter, because the teams are preparing for which pitch they're going to be on. They're ready, they're warmed up and all the rest of it. So once that whistle goes and the football starts, it pretty much runs itself thereafter.
But there's still a lot of skill in it, Simon. I mean, that's the amount of teams. I've been at tournaments with only 6 teams in it, and it's overrun by an hour and a half. So you haven't got that margin for error.
Well, I was restricted by time. I had to be off the pitch by 12, doesn't it? there's a full-scale game coming at 12 o'clock and I live in a side park, it's booked. So I had to say to the referees, here's your eight games or whatever it was, here's your pitch, and I need you finished by 11 o'clock so that we can go to a semi-final and a final. So I don't care how long any game lasts, as long as it's all finished by 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
so the referee then just does it. And I had over 50s and over 60s, and they're different formats because you've got eight teams in one and 10 teams in the other. One's a league and one's an... It just all fits together once that whistle goes. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
We got no excuse there. We got three full-size pitches. We've got four grandstands. But I still didn't want to take on all six categories in 1 week, Simon. So I thought, I'm not cutting my teeth on that. We're over 2 weeks. So hopefully it'll run well.
Yeah. Brilliant, Mark. Well, promise me you'll come back on after it and tell us how it went.
Well, you'll be there yourself, so you'll be asking me questions. You already know the answer.
I don't know about that. But, I don't know how much I'll remember.
You'll have to let me know when this next tournament up in Glasgow is, because I'll come up to next one. I think I'll have to come up and watch that. That'd be interesting.
That'd be brilliant. That'd be great, Mark. Are you going to give us a third tune? Have you got one lined up for us?
I haven't really. I'm just going to throw one off the top of my head. I think I'm going to go Don't Stop by Fleetwood Mac. I think
excellent.
Random, just out of nowhere, that.